Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/Saint14Project. Hello and welcome to the Saint 14 Project Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Sentinel Dad, also known as Alex, and with me as always is Dr. Goku and Average Joe. What's up, dudes?
What's up, buddy?
Hey, everyone.
Same old, same old. But with us as well is a friend of the project. We coordinated with him on a previous charity stream before for mental health. Critical Ape is here. What's up, brother?
How's it going,
dude? How's it going?
It's me. I'm
you,
here.
You've been doing good, though?
Yeah, I've been doing really good. It's been fun lately. It's been a lot of
awesome,
fun.
Awesome, awesome. For those that don't know you, can you give a little bit of background on yourself and fill everyone in on the suicide awareness stream you did a while back?
Yeah. So that was, what, 7 months ago now? Six, 7 months ago? And I got together. I met you guys through Gamma, I believe. And I wanted to raise money for, like, suicide awareness because I've had a couple of friends commit suicide in my life, and I know that it affects a lot of people too. And so we decided to raise money for American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. That's the charity we chose. And we got a bunch of people together. You guys were awesome in helping me figure out like what to do because I had no idea.
I mean, when it's your first time coordinating something like that, Joe would tell you we stumbled many times.
Oh, so, yeah. Like, it's hard, it's, man.
It gets overwhelming, like especially the last like week and a half to 2 weeks before the event has happened. Super stressful.
Oh yeah, well because you get people and they're like, "Oh my god, can we switch my time slot 30 minutes ahead?" And I'm like,
"Just like, oh my sure, god, hold on. I forgot I was supposed to murder someone that day. Can I do it at 10 instead?" Like,
yeah, and it's like, okay, like. And you're, like, cool, calm, and collected on the outside, but on the inside, like, I was freaking out. Yeah. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, but it all ended up working out. It was great. We had a super fun time. That was honestly a really special moment for me, too. Like, that was just a crazy stream. Right. Like, that was the most fun I've ever had.
Well, I think it was very, I think that stream in particular, it was very unique as it is. It wasn't just, like, 12 or 24 hours of someone playing Destiny or someone playing Siege or whatever. It was very eclectic. You had a lot of people doing different things, which is awesome.
Yeah, I was super hyped because like we got Gamma and he was doing his art segment in the morning and he opened it up. That was really cool because like I personally love watching him draw and paint. Like that's crazy to me. He's insane. And then like we had just a bunch of different personalities. I think Maple played some Battlefield. Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. Awesome.
And you also stream over on Twitch. So what kind of stuff you've been streaming over there lately?
Lately, lots of Destiny 2. Lots of Destiny 2 PvP.
Nice.
I've
try hard.
Prided myself on... Yeah, I try hard. A lot. That's kind of my thing. I started getting into Overwatch off stream. I might bring that on stream. I don't know.
Oh, nice.
It's pretty fun.
Well, I mean...
I've never played. So
you should get good stats, because I don't think anyone streams Overwatch.
Well, yeah, it is a good fundamental game. Just people have moved on to other games.
Yeah.
Being completely sarcastic. You know,
and honestly, like, the competitive scene in that game is not the nicest.
No, not so much.
But
awesome.
You know. I watched Tim play it forever, so.
Oh, right on. Yeah, the Overwatch is really huge down here in Atlanta. There's the local esports team, the Atlanta Reign. There's, like, there's watch parties every week all over the city and whatnot. So.
Yes, yeah. I started playing in Gamma. Was like, "Hey, dude, you should join the team that's in Texas so we can hang out." And I was like, "It doesn't work."
It's a bit of
like
a commute. It's a little bit of a commute.
Yeah. Well, like, there's that, and also like you have to be good at the game.
Yeah, right. I'm reminded that every time, and why I don't log on to it is CSGO. It's like, oh man, I remember original Counter-Strike, grew up on that. I'm gonna play some CSGO. 5 minutes later, nope. Dude, I love Steam. Need a new mouse now. Awesome. Well, we're super glad that you're here and came on the show with us. But this week, a little bit of show summary. We're going to be, for our mental health topic, we're going to be talking about like self-diagnosis and some of the dangers involved in there. And we're Dr. Goku is also going to have an awesome character analysis on Gambit from the X-Men. He's a really cool character, so I'm excited for that. Mm-hmm. Goku, why don't you go ahead and take us into our mental health topic?
Sure. So you mentioned to talk about self-diagnosis. And one thing I want everyone to understand specifically about self-diagnosis is it's really difficult. It's really detrimental to a lot of people's mental health. One thing when you go through any undergrad or graduate studies within psychopathology, which is anything regarding mental health and mental health diagnoses, most professors will say that every single class you'll have, you'll leave the class thinking, I have this. Just because a lot of symptoms are overlapping. And this is something I can attest to, me and most of my colleagues, every single class, oh my God, I have this. Oh my God, I have this. Just because certain symptoms will be something that most people have, just not in the severity level that it takes for it to be classified as a diagnosis. Example, someone can have anxiety but not suffer from generalized anxiety.
Right.
It's normal to feel anxious. Something completely different to suffer from generalized anxiety. And a lot of terms that people use in a colloquial sense have kind of changed the meaning. Example, a lot of people say, oh, I'm so OCD because they like something to be nice and tidy. But OCD's far more than that. They actually did some studies regarding how people can kind of go down that type of rabbit hole in terms of self-diagnosing, just because people want to find an answer to what they're going through. What I like to call them is people become Dr. Google. And going through Dr. Google is not necessarily the best thing to do. And going through the study, when they looked at the word brain tumor, some of the symptoms that came back the most were headaches, also caffeine withdrawal. So in all likelihood, when you search the word headache, you most likely you're going to have allergies, a cold, a sinus infection, stress, fatigue, or eye strain. It's very, very unlikely that you'll have a brain tumor. But go down the rabbit hole of WebMD, you're going to have a brain tumor.
I remember one time, dude, I was really sick, and it ended up being, like, mono, basically. So, like, I was just in bed with a fever for, like, a long time, right? But I did the Dr. Google thing and convinced myself that I had some form of cancer and thought I was dying. And so my mom had to, like, sit me down and be like, listen, you're sick. You're fine. It's hard.
When you look at the general symptoms, so a fever, having chills, either an upset stomach, a sore throat, how many medical diagnoses have those as symptoms?
A lot.
So generally, you need to go through Occam's razor. I don't know if anyone knows what Occam's razor is.
I've heard it. Not sure I understand it.
The most likely answer generally is going to be the right answer.
Oh, so when in doubt, okay, pick C.
Exactly.
Okay.
So how likely is it that you have a brain tumor compared to a cold? You're more likely to have a cold than having a brain tumor. When it comes to mental health, it's the exact same thing. But with mental health, it generates something else. So there is something called health anxiety. And a lot of people with health anxiety are obsessed with their health. So any little thing that goes on, they will obsess and go through self-diagnoses with Dr. Google. And they'll make themselves believe that they have something or another that creates an impact or has a negative impact on them. When I say that certain symptoms are general in our day-to-day lives, but also we need to look at the intensity. So most of my professors, like I mentioned, told us that going into these classes, you will see things that you feel you have, but they do not meet the threshold for it to be a diagnosis, just because it needs to have a significant negative impact on your life to then be classified as a diagnosis. So I may have anxiety, but if that anxiety does not have a negative impact on my life, meaning I have no social impairment, I have no work impairment, I have no family impairment regarding that anxiety, it can still be bothersome, but it's not necessarily classified as a diagnosis.
Right.
That makes sense?
Yes.
It does. My thing with self-diagnosis is how it undermines your doctors, essentially.
Well, yeah, well, I know the Harvard Medical School put out a study, a long-ranging study, and they took 48 patients and 48 medical providers, either physicians or doctors of osteopathy, and they kind of put all the different, all the overreaching problems that comes from self-diagnosis via the internet into three lumped areas. Dr. But Google? the most frustrating thing for physicians and providers is that it now becomes commonplace in their daily job where they have to explain the internet search results to people. Mm-hmm. Like they're using this much time out of someone's patient visit that they estimate a certain time in order to get the next person the level of care that they need, and et cetera, et cetera. So that became like one of the most burdensome parts of it for physicians.
And when it comes to mental health, it can be a little bit more complex, just mm-hmm. because what you're typically seeing is the tip of the iceberg. We're seeing the problematic behaviors, the impact that it's having on the person, but you're not necessarily seeing the whys. A lot of the people will say, oh, this particular thing is causing me problems or causing issues, but you have to dig down a lot more to find the root cause. And Dr. Google's not going to tell you that.
Right. Because it doesn't know you.
Exactly. And with a mental health professional, and when some of my clients say, oh, this is going on or that is bothersome, I need to make a decision as to, is it really that bothersome? Is it really that much have an impact on your day-to-day life that we need to spend time working through it? Or should we rather spend that time working on the root cause? And that's why it's important to go seek either a mental health professional or a medical professional, because we have the tools necessary to make that type of judgment call in terms of, this is a disorder, this is not, this needs to be treated, this is something you can learn to live with.
And it's also another issue is that, like, you know, especially those that have health insurance, mm-hmm. You almost every health insurance provider has like a symptom checker that when you can log yep. into your patient portal and or customer portal, whatever, and tick through the boxes so you can let this matrix and the script decide, you know, what you could or could not have. And part of that study I mentioned earlier, they found that comparing the checker to the 24/7 nurse line, which most insurance plans tend to cover, at least here in the United States, they get a higher quality of care out of the nurse line because people can actually describe the feeling, and the nurse or the person, the provider on the other end of the line, can sit there and absorb that information, decode it in their brain that's trained and able to kind of steer the provided person, what the next course of treatment is, whether it's mental health, whether it's, you know, injury or whatever.
Well, and then I remember, I did therapy for 4 years. Yeah. And when we moved here, I switched to a different person, obviously, because I moved across the state. And sit down and you basically try to give that person an overview of your life in that hour time block or whatever, kind of. And that kind of a get to know you thing. And then you sign a bunch of paperwork and all that stuff. And I remember him, when we were talking about confidentiality and things like that, between the patient and the person that's helping you, he was saying that insurance can take their notes or something like that and look at them to see if it decided it was helpful for you or not. I don't know if that's true or if I heard him correctly. I remember that being talked about one time with insurance as well.
So with self-diagnosis, I want to do a small little exercise with you guys just to illustrate a point. So I'm going to list off some symptoms. Oh, no doctor Googling it. Yep. But what is the first thing that comes to mind? Okay. So chest pains, a racing heart, tingling or numbness in the hands and fingers, feeling sweaty, having chills, breathing difficulty, feeling weak, faint, or dizzy. What does that sound like?
Heart attack.
Joe?
Panic attack.
Sentinel?
That too.
I'll hop on the Joe Express.
It is a panic attack. But Critical's initial gut reaction of a heart attack is what about 95% of people will default to. Because it mimics a heart attack. So you punch in your symptoms into Dr. Google, what's likely going to just being spewed out? You go, I have a pain in my chest.
It's going to tell you to go to the hospital.
And that's where the medical professional comes into play of, oh no, we've ran these tests, your heart is fine, it's a panic attack. But without those tests, without that professional knowledge, the person's going to feel that they're going to die, which is pretty much everyone I've had in my office that have had panic attacks in the past have said, my first panic attack felt like a heart attack and I felt I was going to die.
Yeah, I mean, in most of the time when you say the words anxiety attack or panic attack, most people don't realize that a panic attack is a physical reaction to something that's triggered by something mentally. So if you are actively having a panic attack or an anxiety attack and you need healthcare and you can't get to your psychiatrist or your psychologist, you can't get a hold of them, go to the hospital. They will run tests. Mm-hmm. I know that it's expensive and it can be, but they will automatically run tests for you. They can get that to your mental health professional as well, which will help inform the course of treatment that they take for you. Right, Goku?
Yeah. I always recommend people go to a physician, to go to the emergency room, to get it checked. Because if you've never had a panic attack before, it could be a heart attack, but it needs to be checked out.
And a lot of times, I shouldn't say a lot of times, but it does happen that it's something simple, like there's an issue with your thyroid or something like that. Mm-hmm. And something like that can be correctable. You definitely, I know for me, as I get older, I stop not paying attention to when because I always, if something was hurting me or like bothering me, I'd always just like just let it sit there. Oh, I'll be fine. It's just a little bit of pain or whatever. But as I get older, I'm like, no, I shouldn't have to have that pain. I should just go get it looked at, you know.
And self-diagnosis works in that reverse sense as well.
Exactly.
So you have that self-diagnosis of, I have this particular thing, or the self-diagnosis of, oh no, I can't have that particular thing. Problem is, which one is more dangerous? Causing more problems, or neglecting one that can potentially harm you? In my opinion, they're one and the same. And to kind of sum up this whole conversation is, go see your healthcare professional. If you have any, if you have any aches, pains, questions, they're there for a reason.
Google's bad.
There's not going to be people checking with you to make sure you're feeling okay every single day of your life. You really, in this day and age, you have to be an advocate for yourself, for your physical and your mental health.
And I know this is different from someone coming from the Great White North with our socialized medicine, but go see your physician. Any visit can be something that can save your life. And I know certain people that may not have the funds to go see a physician in the States, but your health should be a priority.
Absolutely.
And I think the recent studies and statistics have shown, I think mental health in terms of lost productivity in the States is close to $1 billion, or even a little bit more per year, due to people taking sick days.
That's a fact right there.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact number for sure, but it's kind of astronomically high.
You're pretty close. I know what you're talking about. I've seen the stats on.
Now, as a psychologist, do you communicate a lot with on psychiatrists for your mutual patients and whatnot?
As I try to, we tend to be rather busy and play phone tag for weeks on end.
Did you have anything else for us, Dr. Goku, on this topic, or did anyone have any more questions?
Don't Dr. Google.
Nah.
Go see your medical professional.
Yeah, he's not licensed to practice. He's licensed to read your email. See what I did there? Made a Google joke.
Yeah.
Joe, you're really impressed, aren't you?
I am blown away. That was a good one.
It kind of makes me think of, do you remember the TV show House?
Yeah. House, yeah, loved House.
And House had a remark, it's never lupus.
It's never lupus. Yes.
With Google, it's always lupus.
Oh my god, always. Yeah, they, like, my wife, they, like, when she was a kid, they always tried to point her and say, no, you're pretty sure that you have lupus or some autoimmune disease. And so she went through her whole life, took all these different medications and stuff. And before we got married, like, I was like, man, you're always talking about being tired. I was like, go get a sleep test. And it turns out she is textbook case. Nope. Narcolepsy. Huh. So she has to, if we didn't have insurance, the drug she uses to, like, regulate her sleep patterns would cost $10,000 a month.
Holy. And she has to wake up in the middle of the night to take that too.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's a liquid. It's the base form is the GHB, basically. It just knocks you out to regulate your pattern because most people hear narcolepsy think it's hilarious. It's not. It's a horrible life.
No, it's not. It's dangerous.
Absolutely terrible, because what happens is that she goes straight into REM sleep. She doesn't get any restful sleep. She could sleep a solid 8 hours. It felt like she slept for 40 minutes, you know. And so, like, she takes this drug, this liquid, and she takes one dose when she goes to bed. 10 minutes later, she's out. Completely out. And then halfway through her night, she takes another dose. And then she wakes up in the morning, she actually gets that restful sleep that her brain isn't allowing her to get, because she just goes straight into REM sleep. But yeah.
Insane. Well, to kind of piggyback on that, I had a client that's the opposite of that. Because of severe sleep apnea, he was waking up 90 times per hour.
Yeah. Well, I have really mild sleep apnea. It's because the structure of my throat or whatever. So like I sleep with the CPAP mask on, but like when I started doing that, it was a game changer for my sleep because I was doing the, sometimes people have what's called micro sleeps where they just kind of barely, like people who drift off at the wheel, they will have micro sleeping. They'll still be driving, but they'll be falling asleep at the wheel. Some people with sleep apnea have that in the opposite way where they have this like, it's like a micro wakefulness or something like that, where they're just like sort of, their body's just sort of like waking up a little bit. Mm-hmm. But like I was having that, like it was something really small. It was like 7 or 8 times a night or something like that. But after I got that and like went and got the healthcare that I needed, dude, I'd sleep like a 14 all over again. It's amazing.
Yeah, my client, that he finally got his sleep apnea machine. It's been a year or two, but imagine waking up 90 times per hour.
Where's the room for sleep in that?
There is none.
Yeah.
So he finally was able to get some good night's sleep, and within like a 2 week period, his mood just like that changed.
Oh yeah, because how much of a factor is your sleep deprivation or the amount of like good sleep you're getting? How much does that affect your mental health? Like 100%. I mean, because if you're not rested, if you're not getting the food nutrition, like the brain nutrition that you're supposed to be getting, you're gonna be all haywire.
The more sleep deprived you are, the more you can start to hallucinate. It kind of goes on self-diagnosis. He came to me for some anxiety depression problems, but some of the big thing was he had a sleep apnea problem,
which was exacerbating the other ones.
Exactly.
Yeah, sleep's important. Wait till
you see your
kids.
Healthcare provider.
Always go see your healthcare provider. Awesome. Thank you for the mental health topic overview, Dr. Goku. But let's slip into some gaming news. What you been playing this week, Crit?
Destiny. I'm excited for Shadowkeep.
A lot of people are excited for Shadowkeep.
I don't know if you guys have seen anything about the PvP changes, but like, man, am I excited. I'm so ready. 3v3s coming back. Old D1 maps coming back.
Nice. Yeah, but the 3v3 is only in the labs.
Sandbox.
Yeah,
the labs.
For now. Until they find out the entire community loves it and has been dying for it to come back, and that's how Trials is brought back. Boom. There's my spin.
I'm so ready, dude. I'm just excited.
One of the big things is they released kind of the, not necessarily a roadmap, but a preview of their somewhat battle pass.
I have it pulled up right here, actually, yeah.
And unlike the Fortnite Battle Pass, this one doesn't bother me as much, just because you have a whole bunch of free content. And for the Destiny diehards that, like, I already bought my season pass for year 3,
same.
You get the second tier of rewards. So you don't need to buy in another thing.
Does that pass, or the battle pass per se, come when you buy the season pass, or is that like an additional 10 on top of what the season pass is costing?
No, it's included with the season pass.
Okay, so by buying the season, you buy the pass too. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, this sparked a pretty in-depth conversation in the Discord today.
Yeah.
Just conversing back and forth about this. I'm 50-50 on it. I look at these battle passes as like a springboard to inviting other microtransaction things in, which is fine. You know, they have to make money. Understandable. Mm-hmm. Isn't that? It's just...
If it's cosmetic things, it's nothing to...
Right. You know, well, no, you get a hand cannon from, you know, there's a weapon that you get. But...
I think that's on the free side, though.
It's on both sides. The difference is, if you don't get the battle pass, or, well, everybody's referring to it as the battle pass, but regardless what it's called.
Yeah.
If... You get a free one even if you don't have the pass. So you still gain rewards. There's two different tiers. There's, you know, the subscriber, the unsubscriber. The unsubscriber, mm-hmm. like the hand cannon, you get the hand cannon at like 35 like packages for like what's it called? when you upgrade. Is it
like the bread and grams?
Yeah, but when you level up, essentially. When you level up.
The Eververse.
So it would take you 35 tiers to get the hand can. But if you have the season pass, you get it on the very first one. You also get a full set of that season's gear, the hand cannon, and some other
cool stuff. Wait, so we get this new exotic first, like right off the bat?
Well, it's not an exotic. It's a legendary. But you get it on the first rank up. Essentially, if you have that battle pass. So there's incentives to get it, plus there's other perks you can get on that you can't get on the free one. So it incentivizes you to pay the $10 to get it for the season.
It's also account-wide.
Yeah.
So you get that, I don't know if that boost, the well-rested boost, carries over.
Oh, the 3x XP? Yeah.
Probably.
Because you can get those 3 engrams with like a night worth of play.
Throw a couple medallions on, stack them. Yeah.
Yep. You can blow through that real quick, even on the free one.
Exactly. And the way I look at it, too, is like, I think that the players that aren't going to pay for the battle pass are getting more than they did in the last season pass that we bought, if you think about it, right? Because, like, if I didn't go and buy Black Armory, to my understanding, you can't get Le Monarch or Yotun, or, like, you know, those quest weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have that section. But, like, now if you're in Season of the Undying or whatever, like, you can still get the armor and the legendary stuff and whatever else is unique. It just will take you more time than someone that would pay for it.
And I like how when they end that season, there is a window where all of those items cannot be obtained again. But months later, they're going to release it into the loot pool in some way, shape, or form so people can start getting those items again. If there was a really sought-after, you know, said hung jury comes back, but it's on, like, a quest or whatever, only in the Season of Undying, well, it's going to take you 6 months to, you know, grind it out again to get that perfect god roll again. But I'm really hoping for hung jury to come back.
Oh, hung jury.
I'm so excited, man.
Hung jury. Oh. That was my baby in D1.
I'd leave my wife for hung jury. What?
Don't let her hear you say that.
She knows.
Yeah, she knows.
Yeah,
she knows. It's fine.
We've had this conversation.
Exactly. Joe, what you been playing? Destiny?
Yeah, when I can. I've been volunteering a lot lately, so I haven't had much playtime, but when I've been playing, I put a tweet out earlier this week saying that, you know what, I had fun with the Solstice event. Unfortunately, I played dedicated like 3 nights a week on Destiny, but I wasn't able to get the legendary set of the Solstice gear.
It was a grind.
It was hard, man.
You know what? People are freaking magicians for getting 3 sets on one freaking account and then going onto a different platform and getting again within 2 weeks.
What was so hot about it?
It was just the requirements. When you got to the blue, it was like generate 1,500 orbs, do this, do that, you know, blah, 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 blah. It was a lot of grinding.
It was like 100 mini bosses before they nerfed that part to 50, I think.
Yeah.
And I did it when it was 100, and I wanted to die. It was terrible.
It was very grindy, but I ended up on Monday night, right before a shift. I jumped on and I was at 33 bounties. I had to do 50 for the last piece of armor. I ended up getting it. So I have the legendary set. And it was like,
sweet,
son of a gun, I actually did get it. So now I can still masterwork it, but I'm looking at it like, is it really going to matter masterworking this? Because I'm going to get a blue piece of armor as soon as the next expansion gets, and it's going to be better than this. So,
but the cool part about the set armor from this is it rolls forward to armor 2.0. So when the update comes out, you'll get a 2.0 version of that armor with the extra mod slots and everything.
True, but I'm also going to get new armor and stuff that I'm going to want to wear over that. I mean, the astronaut stuff.
You want the new-new.
I
mean,
yeah.
The new-new.
I want the new-new. I don't want the old hotness. I want the new hotness.
You know? I really like that new Vex armor.
That thing is so cool.
It's singing Vault of Glass vibes for me.
Let me ask this. When we start Shadowkeep, that's its own season, right? Undying isn't until after.
I think they're parallel. I think they're running at the same time, to my understanding.
Yeah, Shadowkeep and Season of the Undying are the same thing.
Okay.
But right. You can play Season of the Undying and not play Shadowkeep.
Gotcha.
Or vice versa.
Yeah. And the cross-play, cross-save, goes live October 1st.
Cross-save's been out for a while. Yeah.
Yeah, well, pre-registering.
You mean the PC? The PC
yeah, for
and,
PC.
Because I can't get Forsaken on Steam right now, so.
Right, yeah.
I'm going to wait. I'm going to get wrecked so hard on PC. It's going to be great.
It's okay, Joe. I'll help you.
All right, I'm gonna hold
I need
to
get
that.
A PC.
I'm gonna put fresh batteries in my Xbox controller to play on PC, just to make people mad.
Have you seen one of these?
Yeah, I got a few of them around here. Some are broke, some aren't.
I feel you.
I'm just Did you see a cool guy's tweet from today?
Who?
Cool guy. He's a big streamer in the Destiny community.
Yeah. I know what you're talking
and
about.
And he was saying that he was having a hard time playing with mouse and keyboard, so he switched to a controller on PC, mm-hmm. and he just mm-hmm. wrecked.
Oh, controller's super viable if you get really good with it. You just gotta be insane.
I don't have the experience using a controller playing Rainbow Six Siege on my PC. I got wrecked.
Really?
I get Rainbow wrecked Six no matter hard, what.
I mean, I'm okay at it with a controller on PlayStation, but like... Not on PC.
So for that game, particularly on PC, you have to use a mouse and keyboard.
Yeah, I mean, like, it doesn't matter what kind of controller you have. I don't care if you have the best controller in the world. Like, it's not...
You get wrecked.
It's not reactionary enough. Like, I could see in Destiny, you can definitely get away with it because there's more room because the environment's not super dynamic.
Well, yeah, you can't put a hole in a wall and snipe somebody.
Yeah, in Siege, you could destroy everything. So it's, every millisecond kind of counts. But anyways, Goku, what you've been playing? You still playing Spider-Man? Did you platinum it yet?
I platinumed it a couple weeks ago, and I finished all of the DLC.
Nice.
Oh, right on.
And they just announced that it's coming out as a Game of the Year edition.
Yeah, I saw that on... on PSN.
I really recommend that game.
Yeah, you keep saying that, and I keep figuring I need to just go ahead and buy it soon.
If you're a superhero fan or a Spider-Man fan at all, this game hits all of the notes. And yeah. I thought it was going to be a, in terms of combat, a Batman clone. But they made it their own.
That's not the case, yeah. Now, taking the Marvel and Spider-Man out of and superheroes out of the equation, how is it as an open world game? Like, if you put it next to
Grand Theft.
GTA or, like, Red Dead, like, how would you compare and contrast them? Solely on the capabilities of their open worlds.
So, GTA and Red Dead have more to do just in terms of the nature of the game.
Right.
Because that's all there is to do.
With Spider-Man, it's linear in an open world type of game. There are side quests and things to do, but you're not going to go, like in Red Dead, go play poker or spend an afternoon just playing poker.
Right.
You're going to be progressing. But with the Spider-Man game, it's... You have to see it as a Spider-Man game in terms of the traversal within the city.
Right.
And they're the first game to get it since Spider-Man 2. I don't know if you guys remember Spider-Man 2 back on, what was it, PlayStation 2?
Yep. That was the first Spider-Man game I ever played.
That was before I was born.
So Spider-Man 2 on PS2, they had the web physics, and every Spider-Man game after that, in terms of when you webbed, you would just web somewhere in the clouds in the ether. Whereas this one, you're always hitting a building and have the physics associated with where you hit your web on the building.
Could you imagine being the game dev that sat in his little cubicle
No, there was
did all that. Oh my!
There was a meeting. There was a meeting right before he started doing that. And like, hey, Norm, come here. Of course, his name's Norm. It's like, Norm, come here. Guess what we're gonna do? And then like 30 seconds later, that conversation is over, and there's many expletives being uttered. It's like, you've got to be shitting me. Gosh.
No, they really nailed the web swinging in that game.
Now, I want to do a comparison because we're talking about Spider-Man. And I'm curious about this because I haven't played it. The new Death Stranding game that is uber hyped right now to be released, the director compared the multiplayer side of that game as equal to the same as the multiplayer on Spider-Man. Now, you've played it. What is the multiplayer like on Spider-Man for that there comparison? There isn't any.
Unless he's talking about Ultimate Alliance.
No, I don't think he is. I think that was his way of saying, yeah, it's just like, God of War.
Yeah, well, Kojima's known for making really crazy single-player stories. If you played the Metal Gear games, it's something.
Yeah, I think the last one I played was like Liberty something.
Yeah, Sons of Liberty.
Patriot.
Metal Gear Solid 2.
Yeah.
If I told you I've never played a Metal Gear Solid game, would you hate me?
No, you're just missing out.
Should I do that?
I would recommend it. Just because, and it's been out for so long. Do you remember in the first Metal Gear Solid game when you meet with Psycho Mantis?
Vaguely.
How crazy that was?
I absolutely do. But for some reason, whenever I think of Metal Gear Solid, I think of a giant exclamation mark above my head and turning into a box.
Yes.
Boom.
But Kojima was known for breaking the fourth wall in terms of reading the save files on your memory card and having Psycho Mantis talk to you as he was reading your mind, or beating the boss by switching your controller from port 1 to port 2. So I can only see what he's going to be doing with Death Stranding now that he has kind of free reign.
Well, I'm sure we'll be seeing more of that in the future. Yeah, I've been playing stuff all over the place. I've been keeping up with my GTA Online. I've been playing the hell out of No Man's Sky since the big update, and it's...
How is it?
Yeah.
Even if you don't do the VR stuff, which I don't... My kids would break it, so that's why I don't have fun. But, like, it's... The quality of life improvements are amazing. Something so beforehand, if you've never played it, you... use resources. It's like, it's for building your bases and doing crafting all sorts of stuff. But before, the resources, depending on what it was, would be limited. So you have these inventory slots between your pack, your ship, freighter in space where you can store all this stuff. But like, you'd only be able to have, it would be something ridiculous. Like, I think it was like 100 or 500 of one resource in each spot. Which, like, would mean you have to farm resources, like, for an hour every single time you play the game. It'd be obnoxious. So they changed it to each one of the spots you can hold up to, like, 10,000. And so it is a complete quality of life changer just for that alone. Not to mention a lot of the social stuff they're doing. Their servers are 10 times better. You're actually like seeing other players out there in the universe and whatever, but it's fantastic. I've been having a lot of fun with it.
They're really realizing the vision that they had set out for.
Well, yeah, I mean, Sean Murray had this, the game that is here now was like his vision like 3 years ago.
I was going to say at least 2 years deliver. Ago. Yeah.
Deliver on it at the time, but like it's an ongoing theme with video games nowadays. Be like, oh, but now it's great. playing that, I logged into Elite Dangerous the other night for the first time in a while, and I was having fun with that. They made a lot of quality improvements to that one too, but yeah.
Have you played Battlefield lately?
So yes, I know we're going to talk about Battlefield 5 later, but you know, I Battlefield 5 specifically, I have just accepted the fact that I'm only going to sort of enjoy it when I'm playing it with friends. And, like, I have a good group of, like, for Battlefield 5 at least, 3 to 5 people more or less are on every single night playing video games. So, like, I can play with them whenever I want to, and, like, I'll enjoy it. But I have not logged in that game to play, like, by myself with all the other players online with someone I don't know in months, just because it's just frustrating. There's so many issues with the game, and it all kind of boiled up this past week. I'll just go ahead and go into a little bit of my topic. So,
Jeff for Braddock, a segue.
Yeah. Where's Ken Hall? But no, Jeff Braddock, the community manager for DICE, was on, he was responding to someone on Reddit, because of course, it's a great place to talk to people.
And, Reddit, of course.
And
where else would you?
He basically, and I quote, "Let's be honest, even our current roadmap is not accurate at this point." And because, like, the roadmap they had released months and months ago was like, oh, we're going to get this on this day, and this on that day, and that on this day. And, like, all that passed by, and it's not happening, like, at all. They're just pushing stuff back. And, like, someone said something about it, right? Because they're mad. Because this is the game that they bought. And
they want to play it.
He's kind of, like, lashed out about it and, like, basically came right out and said that, you know what? The marketing team and the development team, we had two different things. And, like, some of the developers are like, oh, what? You're supposed to have two more weapons? What are you talking about? No, that's not a thing. And, like, hell, the marketing campaign, the Firestorm, before the game came out, their Battle Royale, which is awful, you know, it was supposed to launch with the game and didn't launch till months and months later. So, like,
was it like 6 months later?
Yeah, it was just just this past March, you know. So that was October, March. Yeah, that's about 6 months. And so I don't know, to say disillusioned would be a euphemism, say it nicely. So, like, I'm not gonna play it unless it's other people I want to play with. That will make it fun for me.
The last Battlefield that really got me was Battlefield 4.
Oh, four, you know, four. Dude,
four was amazing.
Four, yes.
Battlefield 3 was
still
so...
play. It's still populated. Four has such this crazy cult following. Like,
I played four last week.
Yeah, dude, like, and like, since the failures of five, like, the it was the day last week or the week before that there are more, the peak totals for people in servers were higher on Battlefield 1 than it was on Battlefield 5. Again, I've been playing the hell out of Hardline, having a blast with it. So, like, they, I don't know, Battlefield, it's not in a good spot. It's not good.
And now with COD coming out with the new Modern Warfare.
Yeah, you know.
They had the open alpha over the last weekend, and people loved it.
That was a lot of fun. And you know what? I think it's really good that COD's finally doing that. And I'm not, like, a Battlefield player that's one of these that just hates on COD at all, really. But, like, this is a great thing because it gives them competition. You know, so maybe they'll step it up. Or, you know what? Maybe I'll just play COD. We'll
see. It's been a long time since I've played COD.
I'm too excited for Ghost Recon Breakpoint.
Did you get in on the alpha?
I'm sorry?
Did you get in on the alpha, like, last weekend?
No.
I heard it was really good, though.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
I saw a couple of videos on it. That new 2v2 mode looks really interesting.
Yeah, it looks so cool.
Yeah.
Mr. Fruit made a very funny video on that.
Yeah, awesome. Also, the first of probably a million Star Wars trailers popped for Rise of Skywalker. Did you guys watch it?
I watched it before I came here.
I watched it and then instantly saw a meme on Twitter of a lightsaber Swiss Army knife. Everybody else, I'm guessing, saw the same thing.
Yeah, I did.
Yep. That was well done. I could have swore I saw that lightsaber somewhere else, though. Because at the end of the trailer, spoiler for a trailer. I don't know.
It's not a spoiler, it's a trailer.
For a trailer.
Stop spoiler in it.
She's got a double-sided lightsaber that is like a switchblade in it. It switches open and it's a full like staff. There's a character from like Clone Wars, and I know Swange Stash from Everyone Podcast would know who the character was, the Sith or whatnot, that had that lightsaber.
Yeah, there's Maul, but then there's the other one.
It's not, not Maul. It's a different one because it's the identical switchblade, you know, lightsaber. She had it, has that, and I'm wondering if there's like a parallel, like, because I'm thinking that that scene, I know there was other scenes in that trailer that stood out. That one stood out the most to me because I took it as like
Had the red lightsaber, which is Sith.
Right, and she had the cloaked hood and everything, but I'm thinking that it was like a vision, like Luke Skywalker had in Empire Strikes Back or whatever, that he was Darth Vader. I'm thinking that she's got the same thing, having that dark vision of herself.
So that was Rey, correct? Because I watched that and I was like, I don't know. It was? Okay.
Yeah, of course it was.
Okay, I wasn't 100% sure. I was looking at that and I was like, I mean, it's her, but is it really her? Like,
I want to see how they pull off Palpatine.
If they do bring
because back when Palpatine. They released that trailer, they also released a new poster of, you know, Kylo and Rey duking it out, and then the ominous like eyes and forehead and, you know, cowl and everything of Palpatine on the poster. And it's like, okay, well, they acknowledge he is here, but in what form? I mean, we got, apparently we have
he's the Walmart ambassador of the Death Star.
Welcome. It's a little dusty.
Here's your paid sticker. Here's your paid sticker.
Is that a return? That's freaking terrible.
He's using his electro fingers to like direct you to the aisle.
Well, no, that's what he uses to scan.
We got Doctor. Oh, yeah. We have Dr. Jones in our chat, so I'm challenging him to put that into art. I want the Emperor as a Walmart ambassador.
There you go. There you go, Doc.
It'd be the best like Funko figure.
Doc will be up at 2 o'clock this morning making a shirt. Palpatine is a Walmart greeter.
That's the best thing we've come up with in 42 episodes. Another thing as far as the gaming industry, so Telltale Games kind of got a little revival, which Telltale had a pretty big following for their narrative style games.
Yeah, they made Thrones, some really good games.
Game of Thrones, Walking Dead, Wolf Among Us.
Borderlands?
There was a set of Batman games. No, not Borderlands. Wait. Yes. Yeah. You're right. There was the
Tales of the Borderlands.
Tales of Borderlands, yeah.
There it is.
But you know they got a slight revival under a different name, but they did win the rights for The Wolf Among Us and Batman, so those are gonna be coming back.
Awesome.
If you want to play those games, which is neat, because a lot of times when these studios die, they die, like hard.
They don't get come back.
Have you seen the trailer for the next Mass Effect?
No.
Ooh. Exactly.
Oh
yeah. I was like, is there one?
I so want there to be.
I know, dude. And like Andromeda really wasn't that bad.
No, it was good. It just didn't hold up to Mass Effect trilogy.
Well,
and the bugs really killed it.
Well, yeah, people hopped on the bugs a lot, but I think the thing that really killed Mass Effect was, I think it was a really big problem with the marketing, because everyone was expecting Commander Shepard in some iteration to be a big part of the game. They didn't do a good job like framing it like this is a different thing, but it's in that same universe.
Yeah, it's a standalone.
They didn't go ahead and like make it like really known that this really has nothing to do with Commander Shepard.
And they were planning DLC for the game, and they just scrapped the entire thing.
They couldn't. I tried to load a PvP match of it. I tried to load a PvP match of it a few weeks ago, and I literally set my controller there while I was like on my lunch break because I was working from home, and it literally was like 45 minutes, and it eventually connected to a match.
Wow.
that much.
But without further ado, Dr. Goku, why don't you take us through character analysis? This is one of my favorite characters from the X-Men. This is Gambit. Mm-hmm. And like the X-Men's my favorite comic franchise, so I'm super stoked.
So Gambit's a really interesting character. He was created by comic book legend Jim Lee and Chris Claremont, and his first appearance in the X-Men books dates back to Uncanny X-Men Annual 14 in July of 1990. His first incarnation in the main series was the month after an Uncanny X-Men 266 that debuted in August 1990. While his appearance in a number of books, his on-screen appearance have been rather sparse. He was played by Taylor Kitsch in X-Men Origins Wolverine, which is a movie at best.
And you're being really generous.
That's personal opinion.
And there was set to be a solo spin-off title with Channing Tatum.
I'll tell you, the portrayal in the X-Men cartoon I grew up with in the early 90s was like spot on for Gambit.
Exactly.
Well, it set the standard for the character. I mean,
yeah,
you can't follow that.
The X-Men cartoon in the 90s really propelled Gambit into popularity. His solo spinoff film, like I said, was Channing Tatum was cast as the lead, was killed in May of this year after 5 years of being in development. It would take almost 15 years after the introduction of Gambit until we finally got an in-depth backstory for the character. So Remy Etienne LeBeau was born in New Orleans, Louisiana. As such, this gives him his famous Cajun accent. Abandoned at birth due to his red eyes and later stolen from the hospital shortly after his birth, Remy grew up in the streets honing his skills as a thief. Becoming a proficient thief led him to being adopted by Jean-Luc LeBeau after he tried to pick his pockets. One day, Gambit saw a young girl being attacked by a group of thugs. While leaping in to help, he did not realize who this girl was. Belladonna Boudreau, the granddaughter of the rival Assassin's Guild, later the pair were betrothed, and in the hopes of melding the two guilds, Belladonna's brother argued against the union, which led to him and Gambit dueling. During the duel, Gambit used his powers of kinetically charging a knife, which ultimately exploded and killed Julien Boudreau. Gambit was excommunicated and banished from New Orleans. Over time, Gambit's powers became increasingly harder for him to control, and he recognized how dangerous this was becoming. Eliciting the help of Mr. Sinister, Gambit underwent brain surgery to remove some brain tissue, which reduced his power level and made it easier for him to control. However, this came at a price. Mr. Sinister asked Gambit to round up and form a mutant team called the Marauders, where he would later become their leader. The group was tasked to go underground and assassinate the mutant group called the Morlocks. This led to the mutant massacre. Seeing the horror, Remy tried to stop it, but could only save one mutant who would later grow to be Mara. After leaving the Marauders, Gambit later encountered Storm and helped her escape from the Shadow King. Remy was later taken in by Charles Xavier's X-Men and fell in love with his soulmate Rogue. One day, when Rogue touched Gambit, she absorbed some of his memory and learned of his involvement with the mutant massacre. This led Gambit to being outcast from the X-Men and taking jobs where he could. And the continuity goes along. I'm just kind of going into his origin story. A running theme within the X-Men comics and with mutants is prejudice that they face. Mutants are hated, feared, and despised due to the simple fact that they are mutants and different from the in-group, which are humans. They also tend to make the bonds between the mutants that much stronger, as they are the only family they really have. This fact also plays a big part in Gambit's psychology. While Gambit is faced with similar ostracization that most mutants face in the Marvel X-Men universe, Gambit also needs to live with his participation in forming the team that killed hundreds, if not thousands, of other mutants during the massacre. This type of guilt can weigh on a person's psyche for a considerable amount of time. This was all too highlighted when Gambit was cast out of his only real family in the X-Men and with his soulmate Rogue. While accepted into the X-Men, Gambit did seem to be rather well adjusted. However, he seemingly looked to be rather masking his grief and guilt. Masking emotional pain, or more clinically, emotional avoidance, is not actively dealing with these emotions. We are rather just placing them on pause, always fighting to keep them at bay due to the pain it causes us. It can cause to alter our thinking patterns and also hit us when we least expect it. Also, Gambit's guilt makes him reluctant to let people close, which can be seen as a form of self-punishment, a way to pay for all of the hurt and pain he feels responsible for. His perpetual isolation can make these feelings all too worse, all the while making him resent his very existence, which is a feeling that many mutants know all too well, for just being who they are, which can be described as tortured souls. You have anything else to add to Gambit Sentinel?
No, I mean, kind of hit the kind of core of him, kind of tragic upbringing. But no, I mean, there's a lot on Gambit, so it's tough to like fit it all into a short period of time.
Due to him being a thief, we could see some antisocial tendencies, but we're mainly seeing it as just how he grew up. So there are some antisocial tendencies there as well.
Right.
But I felt that the whole prejudice that a lot of the mutants face and the guilt that he suffers from the mutant massacre better defines who he is.
Right.
So I'm going to be honest. I've never been like a really big comic book or like I've never been super into that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But like after hearing that, like that does make a lot of sense about the whole mutant thing. Because like obviously I've seen the movies, like I've seen X-Men movies before. Mm-hmm. So like I at least have a vague understanding of who people are, you know, and like kind of where they come from and stuff like that. But I never kind of thought about how, I mean, being a mutant does immediately make you an outcast because you're different and people don't like difference like that. Mm-hmm. That's kind of crazy. I never thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, like one of the central themes of that part of the X-Men universe is the actual like political legislation to make them register as people,
right?
This is like an allegory to the Holocaust. A lot of people view it that way, but it was great job, Dr. Goku.
Yeah, that was cool.
And there was a good video on Because Science. You guys know that
mm-hmm.
that YouTube channel.
Yeah.
He did an analysis on Gambit's powers and if they would make the playing cards out of different material. And if doing the math, if Gambit would make his playing cards out of uranium-235, each card would explode as a 1 megaton explosion of TNT.
Holy shit.
Wow. That's got a punch.
Yep.
Jeez.
Better stick with the bicycle cards.
Right? Because those are cheap as crap. I know it.
Dime a dozen.
Awesome. Well, fantastic. Thank you, Dr. Goku. I think that kind of wraps up our character analysis and thus the show this week. But before we get going, I've been meaning to do this for like months. I keep forgetting. But there's a guy in the Destiny community. He's with he's a derper. He's one of the Destiny reset guys. His handle's, he plays on Xbox. His handle is Bit Dead. We all know him as Ian.
Yeah.
And this guy, like, if you listen to any kind of Destiny podcast or like you're just aware of the Destiny community, odds are you've heard of him. But he's also just a super cool guy. I met him because he and I mutually really liked the old Return to Orbit podcast from years ago from Destiny 1. It was like the only British podcast for Destiny at the time. So he's a Titan guy like I was, so like we'd always give crap to the other hosts that were like warlocks or hunters or whatever. Yeah. But Ian is like one of the most supportive people, not just for the project, but like the entire Destiny community. Like if there's a Destiny podcast out there, he's retweeting your stuff every week. He's listening to every single episode. The nature of his work, he gets the opportunity to listen to a lot of podcasts. But Ian, we love you, brother. Thank you so much for all the support over and over again.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You're the best. Your country's going through some crap right now. You guys need to figure it out. so work on that.
Bife
will just like go to another country. He doesn't have time to listen to crap. But anyways, Ian, thank you so much for all the support. We love you, brother. But yeah, it kind of wraps us up this week. Critical Ape, where can people find you on the internet? Where can people catch your stream?
People can catch me live over on twitch.tv/criticalape. Same spelling, you know, critical and then ape. I also have Twitter too. I'm trying to get my Twitter game up. I'm pretty bad at that. I believe it's at Critical Ape. Yeah, yeah. But
I thought that was ingrained in your generation's blood.
So like, I'm gonna be honest with you.
I think I thought you guys are just born and like you just know how to Twitter.
You guys were born into social media, weren't you?
I mean, yeah. But I've learned that not everybody just wants to see video clips of me in PvP. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah,
I hear you. I should probably be a person on that platform.
There you go. Well, and what's your handle on Twitter?
On Twitter, I believe it's at Critical Ape. Let me go double check though.
Yep.
Got to get it right, you know.
Totally.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's at Critical Ape.
Word. Fantastic. But thank you all for joining the project this week. We're here recording every other week on Thursdays at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can catch us all over the internet, Twitter, Twitch, Instagram, Facebook. You can email us. We have an awesome supportive Discord. All that's listed on our website, projectguardians.org. But for all those other social media places, just search Project Guardians. You'll find us. Our Discord is also pinned on our Twitter. All sorts of great resources on there. Listen to us on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, all the places you can listen to podcasts. We're on there. Check it out. Write us a review. Or don't write us a review. I don't care. No, I'm just kidding. It's up to you. You do what you want. Dr. Goku, where can people find you on the internet?
They can find me on the interwebs at SSJ5Goku28.
Awesome. And what about you, Brother Joe?
You can find me at the Twitters, AverageJoe227, and at 3,100 different Discord servers.
Like going up or down?
It's a very specific number.
Yeah. Did you look at that recently?
Yeah, there's actually a set of numbers on the bottom of my Audacity recording that say 3100. So.
There you go. I got that same setting. Dave still isn't here. I texted him today. Because he does our art posters, as most people know. And but he said he cannot wait
on
to come back
phone.
To show. So end of on his phone. End of September he'll be back, and we're all anxiously waiting. I know he's super ready to be done working nights. So he can participate.
I miss him. He's cool.
Yeah. And I'm Sentinel Dad, also known as Alex. You find me everywhere on the internet. Just search Sentinel Dad on Twitter, extra D on the end. But again, thank you for joining the project this week, and we will see you next time. Later, dudes.
Good night, everyone.
Peace.